Going Linux, episode 109, Computer America, number 28. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 28th appearance on the Computer America radio show from July 20th, 2010.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America Show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 20th of July, 2010, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
What happened to June, Kerry? I mean,
so, July is almost over.
I know. I got to tell you, it is. It's moving fast. What is that? They say when you get older, time moves fat more quickly. I watch it on the science channel. Do you think that's true?
I think that when you're younger, for the most part, you just don't have a lot of things going on. And as you get older, and you have to deal with keeping up a house and getting the bills paid and going to work and maintaining a family and a relationship with your significant other, suddenly things seem to go by quicker because you're so occupied and there never seems to be enough time to get everything done.
Yeah.
So I always said I would rather be at the end of life thinking that it just began and wondering how it got by so quick than to be going, thank goodness I'm here at the end of life. It's taken so long for me to get here. You know, it almost seems like I've always found, for example, when I was working a traditional job, that there were people around me that seemingly would go out of their way to find anything to do but work. And I always thought, man, their day must go really slow, because I found when I just buried myself in work, the end of the day you approached much more quickly.
Well,
so I think it's a good thing, I guess, is what I'm saying, compared to the alternative of everything seemingly taking forever, watching grass grow. Yeah, that's torturous.
Yes. Well, did you catch any movies this weekend? I'm afraid to ask.
I saw Inception.
Oh, you did? I didn't see it yet. Okay, so there you go. What did you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down, what? Should I see it?
It's a thumbs up. I think if you like movies like The Game with Michael Douglas,
or I like that.
Vanilla
I actually
Sky
like that.
With Tom Cruise, it's in that genre of film.
Vanilla Sky was a little bit of a stretch. It was okay. I like The Game, although the coincidences that they quote-unquote arranged were so improbable, you had to really stretch that, the timing to make that really happen.
No, yeah. I think that they gave him a very good psychological profile and knew what he was going to do
before he did it. Yeah, but to coordinate all that stuff, I don't know. But the thing is,
if it plays with your mind, you know, movies that do
is
that.
Is it Matrix-like? Because that's what it seems to be, like the dream world or something.
I wouldn't call it Matrix-like, no. Matrix, I think The Matrix has a better overall story and a good message in it about making decisions and you have choices to make. This movie doesn't really have that message, but it's I think it's worth seeing. I think it's worth the ticket price and worth seeing in the theater. I did finally get to see Clash of the Titans. I'm glad I didn't see that in the theater, although it looks good.
Yeah. Was that in 3D in the theaters? Was that the
not originally. They converted it to 3D, which James Cameron likes to call 2.8D, because it was never originally filmed in 3D. They put it through a conversion process. And then I think that you said you saw a couple movies, right?
I saw Predators and The Last Airbender.
Ah, that's right. And those you said were seeing in the theater or DVD rentals?
No, because The Last Airbender is 3D, definitely like you should see it. And Predators, if you're a fan of the original movie, you'll like this one.
Cool.
All right, so that's it. So there you go. That's right. It goes back sort of to partially to the beginning. A lot of the original things, issues are kind of taken up in Predator. Did you like the original Predator movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
It was okay.
Okay.
It was okay.
You saw it in the theater?
I did.
Okay, so did I. All right, well, if you liked it, then you'll like this. If, you know, that depends.
Some I'll have to check it out.
I think you will. All right, well, listen, another thing we're going to check out, of course, is our show for tonight. And it is the, we have different shows planned for different times of the week. And every third Tuesday of the month, we dedicate it to the topic of Linux because the Linux operating system continues to be more and more popular. So, you know, some of you are still thinking, is Linux right for you? You know, should I go in? Should I dump Windows or try it alongside of Windows? You know, it's an important operating system. So every third Tuesday of the month, we're devoting the entire show to Linux in order to answer questions like that. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, hi. Welcome into Computer America. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We are doing just peachy. And did you catch any movies, by the way?
No, I haven't seen any movies. I was on vacation last week. Actually, I was on a business trip to Toronto and did a little vacation before and after. And so it's been a little bit busy for me. I've been doing other stuff other than watching movies. But I do think that the ones that you've mentioned are all very interesting to me. Looks like I've got a lineup to get through now.
And you know, and you're gonna have to play some catch up because there's still a few more that are on the cusp of being released. I just saw the promotion for the Green Hornet. I don't know if you remember the TV series.
Oh yeah.
The Green Hornet. They're redoing the Green Hornet. You know, that was where Bruce
Ryan
Lee.
Ryan Reynolds is playing the
Green Hornet,
which I think is a good choice.
And Bruce Lee was the original Kato, and now they got this other fellow who's doing it. I'm not familiar with him, but the preview looked really great, so I want to say. So looking forward to seeing that. There are a number of them that are just on the cusp. So, don't fall too far behind, Larry.
I'll try not to.
So anyway, what we're going to do is Linux, of course, what we asked Larry to do is come up with an underlying theme or topic for the month, and then kind of get also in hour two we're going to dedicate that to emails that were written to Larry about Linux and that he selected, and we will choose those as well, and or choose to read those as well in hour two. But the topic for tonight that Larry has chosen is supporting Linux computers. Now, when you say supporting, do you mean like technical support when there's a problem or what? Or just putting them up on stilts or something?
Yeah, putting them up on blocks and letting them in the front yard, you know, kind of the redneck version. The topic supporting Linux computers is meant to be for those of us Linux geeks who are recommending Linux to our friends and our acquaintances and anybody who will listen. We end up being the Linux support people as well. Good news is, once people are familiar with some of the key differences with Linux, it requires much less support than Windows does. And as a result, it's really not that difficult. But I wanted to highlight some of the maybe negative sides of Linux as it applies to those of us trying to support Linux computers. And
Wait a minute. You're saying there's a negative side to Linux?
Oh, yes, of course there is.
You're admitting to this on national broadcast radio? Okay.
Hey, I'm a realist here, guys. I'm not ivory tower, everything is perfect with Linux kind of guy.
Well, of course, the Mac is perfect, so I figured, well, okay.
But... Well, sure, but that's because Steve Jobs tells you it is.
Oh, boy. Boy, I tell you, one of the things I'm going to talk about later on this week in my solo show is the flurry that's going on over there with Apple and his speech that he gave the other day about the antenna problems with the iPhone 4. But that was really interesting. But that's another story.
Yeah,
you mentioned
Steve
Jobs. Well, but that'll be for another show. That'll be probably coming up this Friday when we'll do our Apple show. But anyway, supporting Linux computers, tech support, that's important. Who do you call for tech support? Because now when you isn't that one of the advantages to buying a paid distribution of Linux? Because when you in that purchase of the paid distribution, you do have someone to call, right? Like Red Hat or whatever, whoever makes that distribution, a part of the purchase price is some sort of technical support.
Yeah, for Red Hat, when you purchase the distribution, you do get technical support with Novell's version. OpenSUSE, you get technical support when you pay for the distribution. With some others, you still get the software for free, but you can purchase tech support separately. So, sure, you can get support from the distributor or the vendor or the manufacturer, depending on how you want to view it. And, of course, you can pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are techs out there who support Linux computers, just like there are techs out there that support Windows and techs that support Mac. So it's not any different that way.
Mm-hmm.
The real difference in the downside is there are fewer tools for support people to use when supporting Linux computers.
With support.com, one of the things that they can do is they can take over your computer remotely basically see everything that you see on your computer screen, so they can go in there and diagnose and check out the problem and debug and whatever they need to do. Things like that are not necessarily readily available for Linux, you're saying, at this time?
Well, they're readily available, and there are some very, very good tools. However, the person receiving the support needs to be a little technical in nature to be able to use them. So you're kind of in a catch-22 there.
Yeah.
The people who need the support are the people who probably couldn't get the remote desktop set up, even with a little guidance and instructions and those kinds of things. There is a very good description of how to set up remote access on Ubuntu, and we'll include a link in the show notes to that. And that's been updated very recently, so it's really up to date. But even the average computer user, and I'm talking about normal people, not the geek type people, whether it's a Windows geek or a Linux geek or a Mac geek, those folks may have even a little bit of difficulty doing that sort of setup. So what I would really like to see are more tools like you would find with LogMeIn, for example, or even some of the tools that the folks that do GoToMeeting do. They do some GoToAssist and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is many of them are either not compatible with Linux at all, or if, for example, in some of the collaboration software where you can share your desktop screen for presentations and that sort of thing, if they provide any support for Linux at all, typically it's as a client, so you can't run Linux and host a meeting, for example. So GoToMeeting doesn't support Linux at all. LogMeIn does, but LogMeIn supports Linux only on the opposite end. You can use it as a client, but not as the server. In other words, you can't control a Linux computer using LogMeIn. You can control a Windows computer from a Linux computer, but not the other way around.
Ah, okay.
Or not even Linux to Linux, because there just isn't a remote control portion of it that allows you to control a Linux computer and lock me in.
So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll get into more of the support and what it takes to keep your Linux computer purring smoothly. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's all Linux tonight here on Computer America. And we're doing Linux tonight for both hours. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us for hour one and hour two. And the topic for tonight is supporting Linux computers. And we continue on with that topic as we open up our phone lines and emails and what have you. So, you're saying, Larry, that supporting Linux computers, the stuff is there for it, but it's just a little bit more difficult to get to it?
Yeah, in general, it does take a little bit of technical expertise to get things set up, particularly if you're behind a firewall or a router or that sort of thing. And many of the tools that would by default come with Linux for free require that you know how to open a firewall port or port forward or that sort of thing to get things to work. And I probably lost some of our listeners already just with that description if they're not, you know, more experienced computer users. I have to say, though, that there have been some significant progress, on the part of some of the software manufacturers or software developers that provide support software. Now, I know Jack from Toronto in the chat room has been talking a little bit about TeamViewer, and I haven't tried TeamViewer, and their supported version for Linux is supposed to work cross-platform in both directions, whether it's Windows or Linux or Mac, and the Linux version is in beta, but typically, the beta software for Linux is better than some of the production software for Windows, I found. But I haven't tried it myself, so I can't comment on it. Jack was saying that it works pretty well. He hasn't used it a lot, but has used it a little bit, and it seems to work just fine. In many cases, the software that actually works will not be free of charge, but rather will have some fee associated with using it. And that's not unheard of, for sure, in the tech support world. And it's kind of to be expected, I guess. But TeamViewer is one of the few that I've heard actually works and works well. Did you guys have TeamViewer on the show?
Yeah, we just had Konstantin Falciano on, joining us all the way from Germany.
Uh-huh.
To talk about TeamViewer.
And did you talk about Linux support at all?
We did.
And can you give me a review of it?
No, because I haven't used it. I don't have Linux, so all I know is it's available for Linux, and it's supposed to work in most distributions, and that's pretty much all I know about it.
Okay. Well, that's
and that it's not open source.
No, I wouldn't expect it to be, and most of the companies who do support or do provide software for support purposes are not going to be open source. However, there are some open source software packages out there that are free of charge that are more of the meeting and collaboration variety. And many times you can use that software for providing support as well. Very little of that software is free of charge. You might have a free 30-day trial period to see if it works. And one of the programs that actually fits that category is called Yugma, Y-U-G-M-A. And we'll have a link to Yugma in the show notes. I included Yugma in one of my reviews for my company when we were reviewing remote control software and tried it out for about 30 days. And it works very well. It's very similar to what you might find from GoToMeeting or from some of the other services for collaboration and meeting and collaboration software. And it works very well, again, cross-platform, Linux, Windows, Windows to Linux. I don't remember whether it has Mac support. Another one that I evaluated was YuGyu. Some of these names are out of this world, aren't they? You spell that one, YuGyu.com. That one didn't rate so highly as Yugma in my review.
All right, we're going to take another break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. It is our all Linux show tonight. Everything you want to know about Linux and more. We're here to answer your questions, including, you know, is this something you should add to your computer? We'll be right back. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He is the guy who does the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast that you can listen to, and it's all about Linux. And we dedicate the show to the topic of Linux every third Tuesday of the month, and certainly an opportunity to get your Linux questions answered, especially if this is something you've been thinking about, or you know you're. You know, you want to look for a Windows alternative, you might want to check into Linux. And the topic that we're talking about this month is, or the underlying topic is supporting Linux computers. And it turns out that that although some of these tools exist, Larry, you're saying the people who are getting the support themselves need to have a little extra insight into the operating system, more so than someone who, let's say, is getting tech support from a remote user for Windows.
Yeah, there are fewer tools. There are some tools that make it very easy, but there are fewer tools out there. I know when I was supporting Windows computers, there are tools that you can use that will allow the person giving the support to send a link to the person receiving support, and then that just runs a little ActiveX control. Provides some sort of VPN connection through firewalls or runs across firewalls using some sort of technology. As a result, it's much easier using those kinds of tools to support a Windows computer because there are fewer of them for Linux.
All right, we're going to break just for 60 seconds, and we'll continue on. It's our All Linux Show tonight, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, or, of course, our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, where Larry is participating as well. 60 seconds. We'll be right back.
We're back with the Computer America Show. It's 40 minutes after the hour, and we are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. It is the third Tuesday of the month. It's All Linux for the topic of the show for both hours tonight, talking about getting support for Linux, and a little bit about remote access for Linux. And where did we leave off, Larry? We've got Larry Bushy, the host and creator of the Going Linux podcast, a free on-demand digital broadcast that you can listen to on your computer at your leisure. And I'm sorry, Larry, where did we leave off?
Well, we were talking a little bit about the fact that we have fewer tools to use under Linux to provide real-time support to folks running a Linux computer. On the other hand, much of the support that Linux users find is from other Linux users. And there are many, many ways to get support that don't involve a tech at all. Certainly, you can have phone-level support from, as we've discussed earlier in this particular show, phone-level support from the folks that provide you with your Linux distribution. You can get phone-level support from Linux techs as well, and many of them will have the tools that they need to do remote control and remote viewing of your screen and things like that. However, many Linux users and even the more recent converts who have switched over from Windows and are more the normal type of user, the average user who really doesn't care to understand how the computer works or the operating system works or how it's set up or any of that stuff. They just want it to work. You know, put the toast in the top, push the button down, and a few minutes later, you've got toast. That kind of thing. You know, and for that level of user who just wants Linux or any computer to be an appliance, just speaking with their buddies or the person who recommended Linux is probably the best way for them to get support. And I'm not saying that they rely on that person alone, but because that person is probably someone a little more familiar with Linux, they know that there are forums that you can go to and get some real-time support from real users who have had typically exactly the same problem you've had. And in many cases, going to the forums, you end up speaking with the developer of the software program that you're using, and they're providing you with the support, and more on the lines of a chat sort of thing. Typically it's in a forum rather than a chat, but you can get the collective mind of everyone in the forum who's had that problem to give you suggestions and walk you through it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was just getting something here in the chat room, but I got distracted. Excuse me, but I always get caught up in the chat room from the questions. But by the way, a new revision to Firefox just came out today as well.
I'll have to update.
Yeah, just want to mention that that's an important update.
I just want to say, based on the conversation going on in the chat room, there tends to be this human quality of, I'm right, and you must agree with me. And if you don't agree with me,
I'm going to kick you out of the chat
room. Feeling that I don't know if they have self-doubt, but it's like they get upset and they want to just continue to try and convince you to agree with them, as if it vindicates that they're right. Like the Earth is square. No, what is it? Yes, it is. Okay, it is. Okay, now we're all happy because we all agree. If you believe in something firmly, you should not require anybody else to agree with you. If you know without a doubt that what you're saying is correct, it should not be important for you to get vindication from others to agree with you.
You don't have to proselytize your belief. Yes, exactly. Okay.
So my advice to those in the subjects that we're talking about is, I'm not suggesting anybody's wrong regarding what they like or dislike. You can like or dislike whatever it is.
Oh, just tell them they're wrong.
For example, you might not like a particular type of food or vegetable, and that's fine. If you don't like it, maybe it's the taste, maybe it's the texture. You don't need to justify that to anybody.
And anyone who's had dinner with Carrie will know exactly how deep that goes.
I'm a very fussy eater, yes.
I thought I was picky until I had dinner with my co-host one night.
Yeah, most people who say they're picky eaters haven't met me.
Oh, yes, exactly.
I don't make excuses for it, and I don't want to put anybody out for it. In other words, I'm not going to go to a restaurant where it's like a family-style meal and everybody has to eat the same things, because that would either put me in an awkward place by not eating or put everybody else in an awkward place by forcing you to eat what I'm having. So I guess the point is that you should feel confident in what it is that you like and what it is you believe, and certainly say your piece, say what you feel, and leave it at that.
Yeah.
I think
it would be safer to take you to a cafeteria because of like 50 different types of food.
No, absolutely not. I will not eat cafeteria food.
I'm saying, there you go. Because
they have like a big vat of like scrambled eggs. And I just think mostly like buffet style food. And mostly what happens is
you don't like buffets?
In my opinion, when a cook is making an individual meal, I don't eat on the cruise. I eat very poorly. Or we go to the restaurants where individual meals are cooked. There's more care taken on an individual meal by the cook than in cooking a vat of eggs or a vat of – you know, when I was on a cruise once, they had hamburgers soaking in some sort of liquid. Now, I've cooked hamburgers all my life, and never once have I ever thought to soak them in something liquid. That was just – very strange and unnatural to reach in with some tongs into this soupy liquid and pull a hamburger out. But we're getting a little off topic.
Back onto topic
please.
Here with a little bit of a segue. So what you're saying is that when you have some mass-produced, one-size-fits-all meal, it's less appetizing to you than something that's created with care and designed specifically for your palate, right?
Well, it's about quantity, right? I mean, if you've got a stovetop that generates so much heat and there's so much cooking surface, and you have covered it with 100 times the size of one normal portion, it's just not going to get cooked the same with the same level of detail to the care and the quality of that vat of scrambled eggs versus two eggs on the stovetop, which will encompass the entire stovetop.
Not to get on the proselytizing bandwagon here, but you know, many of the folks that are in the chat room are folks that are supportive of Linux, and as a result, they tend to.
Well, that's
have
who we want here. We're talking about Linux. We want Linux supporters, but I think what turns a lot of people off to Linux are extremists on the Linux supporting side, and I think it turns people off to certain religions as well, because it becomes almost religious in their cult or fanatical sort of extremism. And there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, this is good and you should try it. Don't try and shove it down somebody's throat, because now you've gone from inviting them to try it to now they're going to be on the defensive saying, hey, get this out of my face. I'll try it of my own will.
Yeah, I'm the kind of person that believes that unless somebody, a computer user, let's say, sees some value in switching from whatever they're using now to Linux, then A, they're not going to, and B, they have no need to. They perceive no value in making that switch. And I was going to make a snide remark about, you know, Windows being more along the lines of the mass-produced, large-volume sort of operating system, where Linux is designed with a little more care.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But I'm not going to say that.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. I guess where people have different needs. And people
absolutely.
Will assume, and I deal with this all the time, Larry. I deal with this. In fact, today I was giving a presentation today, and one of the people in the audience raised their hand and they said, "Can you tell me what SpyBot is?" And I said, "Oh, SpyBot's it's a anti-spyware application that, in my opinion, isn't as good as it used to be, and I don't recommend it anymore. Why do you ask?" "My son put it on my computer."
Mm-hmm.
Well, her son put something on her computer that she didn't know what it was or what it did or why it was there. But he was doing that for her, in spite of the fact he didn't allow her to make her own decision or to determine for herself if she needed it or if it would be useful or if she wanted it. He made this decision as if he knew better than her what was good for her on her computer. It's very rude, in my opinion. It's kind of disrespectful to us to imply that I don't want to bother you with all this technical information, so here, let me just... And I told her, I said, you know, friends and family with the best of intentions have almost paid for my car. Because I'll get the phone call to say, hey, can you help me fix my computer? And the intentions were in the right place. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. Stay with us.
Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. It's all Linux every third Tuesday of the month. We devote the entire show to the topic of Linux, and we're going to continue on in the next hour with you, Larry. I know usually we just promote your podcast at the end of the show, but we got an extra minute here. Just tell people if they want to listen to the Going Linux podcast, where do they go?
Well, if you're a Windows user or a Mac user, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast there. You can go to our website at goinglinux.com, and there are some instructions there on the website for going to our show notes page and playing the podcast episodes right there on the website, or you can put them into a podcatcher or podcatching software subscribe there to get the latest episodes delivered to your computer automatically.
And how long have you been doing the Going Linux podcast? Now, how many episodes?
Long time. This will be episode 109.
Wow, okay.
So we've been going for a little while. A few... fewer episodes than you guys have had,
if
you count every night.
Yeah, that's true. Well, listen, we've got another full hour of Computer America going on here. You're going to continue on with us, and we're going to go to some of the emails that you have received over the past month, and we will read them. They have questions about the Linux operating system. Of course, you can queue up if you want to as well. We have open phone lines, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We'll be right back after your local and your national news on your local station. This is the Computer America Show.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight. Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And they're talking food in the chat room during the break, and I'm getting really hungry.
Hey, it's your fault. You're the one who even brought up the whole me being a picky eater thing.
I know, but it's...
there you go. Careful what you say.
Yes, it's true. In the meantime, it is talking about tasty things.
Hour two, all about Linux.
Yes.
I just have to clarify, this always happens. It's always a matter of time before someone starts, you know, implying in some way, shape, or form that I don't like Linux simply because I don't run it. I don't have to run it. I like it. I like Linux. I like what Linux stands for, and I know that it'll be a great solution for a lot of our listeners out there who will take the time to try it. And although Linux doesn't meet my needs of what I need an operating system to do today,
yeah,
I certainly haven't written it off and said never, and many of the devices that I own have Linux-based software in them, as we've talked about in the past.
Sure.
From my router to my media streaming device.
Just because you don't use something doesn't mean you don't like it.
So, yeah. Well, in a way, I'm using it. I'm just not using it as my operating system.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a great operating system. I fully endorse it, and having a Linux show was my idea. So don't think for a minute that I don't like Linux simply because I don't run it as my operating system. So you know.
All right. And, of course, joining us is Larry Bushy. He continues on with us into the second hour. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and he is our Linux correspondent and Linux expert who joins us every third Tuesday of the month when we devote both hours of the Computer America Show to the topic of Linux. And one thing that we like to do, we like to do several things, but the one thing that we kind of move into in the second hour is some of your emails that Larry has received over the past month. With Linux questions that he selects and reads and discusses on the air. But before we do that, just want to remind you that we also have open phone lines, toll-free 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That'll get you on and get you through. Email live@computeramerica.com, or please join us in our chat room. Larry is in there as well at computeramerica.com on our homepage. Just join us in the Computer America add-on chat room. So, Larry, you want to start doing some of these emails and discussing them?
Well, yeah, let's do that. And if we can get off the food topics in the chat room, maybe there'll be a question or two come up there. But in the meantime...
Yeah, sorry, we're talking about roasting pigs.
At least I'm not going to look over at the chat room for a few minutes. Anyway,
yeah.
Our first email is actually from Barry in British Columbia, Canada, and he's provided us an update on his experiences with Linux. He's written into the Going Linux podcast in the past and is letting us know how things are going. He says, I have not written in a while, so everything with Ubuntu must be fine. Well,
no news is good news.
Exactly. And he continues, well, everything is except that I upgraded to Ubuntu 10.04, which went well, but then I had a new printer given to me, a Canon IP3500, and I could not make it work. I do not know if other people have had this problem, but I was looking for the complicated answer and, of course, couldn't find it. In frustration, I took a break and returned to just let Ubuntu lead me through it, and it worked perfectly. I think what I'm trying to say is that as a longtime Windows user, I just instinctively looked for the complicated solution instead of letting Ubuntu lead me to the solution.
That's probably what I would
podcast,
do.
Barry. Yeah, and for those of us who are Windows users who are used to when you get a new piece of hardware, you have to find the disk that came with the hardware to install the driver if it's something brand new and you happen to be using an old version of Windows like XP or something like that. And then you install the driver, and if that driver doesn't work, you go to the website to see if there's an updated driver, the manufacturer's website. And I know there are some driver packs that you can get these days. I think you may have had a show on that very recently, like yesterday.
Yes.
And
you're on the ball.
Hey, I like to keep up with my Computer America show.
That's
here.
Great.
You know, looking for a driver in Linux typically is not the first thing you want to do. The first thing you want to do is plug in the hardware and see if it works. And the reason you do that in Linux and the reason you can do that in Linux is because many of the software drivers are developed by the Linux community itself and are included in the updates to the kernel. And when you get an update over the Internet, and typically it's an automatic update and it's free and it just happens in the background, you get all of those updates with all of the hardware support that's the latest hardware support for your particular distribution of Linux. And typically, when you, for example, plug in a printer, you just plug it in, and the printer setup wizard starts up and walks you through it and finds the right driver, and you're up and running in no time. So, Barry, yeah, I've fallen into that trap myself looking for the complicated solution, and I've learned the hard way. You just plug it in and see if it works, and if it doesn't, then you start looking for a solution.
Exactly.
I guess that makes sense. No sense trying to solve a problem that you don't even know for sure you've got.
Exactly. And I think it's just habit that when, you know, people switch from Windows, you do typically, more often than not, have to install a driver before your hardware will work.
Well,
with Linux, it's the other way around.
It's true of XP, but I've had the opposite experience with Windows 7. It's done an amazing job at just finding everything that I've plugged into it, with few exceptions.
Right.
But as it ages, you know, XP is so old now, it's of course it's not going to have drivers for modern hardware. I mean, that's
sure.
Common sense. Now,
and that's the point.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you a question about, I was reading about a utility. Oh, no, I don't know if I can find it now. Called Fog Project?
Yes.
Do you know about it?
I know a little bit about it. What I do know is that it's a way to set up networked computers from a Linux server that allows you to very quickly and easily push images of those computers out to configure machines on your network with the same image and give each computer out there its own credentials. In other words, user login and password and that sort of thing.
Well, here's what I find most interesting. It's actually specific images.
Mm-hmm.
Fog is a Linux-based free and open-source computer imaging solution specifically for Windows, XP, Vista, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Linux.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Well, and the reason for that is many corporations have their servers running Linux and supporting the end-user computers running Windows. The reason they do that is because the Linux servers are much less immune to viruses and infections of all kinds. Because of the design of Linux, it seems to be much more resilient and much more resistant to people trying to hack on it. Even though many of the Internet computers that run the Internet itself are running Linux, people find, the virus writers find that it's much easier to hack into Windows, especially since the end users are the ones who have the lax security. They would much rather hack into the Windows computers and turn those into spam machines. But and that's why many corporations will have a Linux server supporting Windows users. And this is one of those tools that make it easy for the server administrator to do their work.
Well, I thought about it and I thought, well, gee, as a technician who works on Windows computers all the time, this would be kind of cool to have.
Sure.
But then when I saw I had to set up a Linux server and it would be sort of devoted to just doing that one thing for me, for my purposes, not that it would have to be devoted to doing that one thing, but
right.
that would be the only purpose I would have for it. I just thought, well, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. I already have a solution using other tools. So, but I guess it's been around for a while, and somehow I don't know if we were was with driver packs. It might have been with driver packs. The subject came up.
That was last night. Was that Friday?
Was it last night the subject came up?
No, the driver packs.
I don't know if it was when driver packs was on or not. I'm thinking it was. And then there was another utility, I think, called LinWin.
Uh-huh. That one I haven't heard of.
All right. I made a sort of a mental note that I wanted to ask you about those the next time you were on, and just so happened it was today, and so there we have it. So for anybody out there who's curious, who thinks that might be appealing to them, you might want to check that out. Fog Project, F-O-G, Fog. You might just hit Google with that, and it'll take you right there. It is a SourceForge project, which I love the SourceForge stuff. I think that is...
Yeah.
And we've been trying to get a representative of SourceForge on the show for a long time, just a general representative of the site.
Why won't they come on?
it's not really any one person, so it gets a little complicated.
Okay. I was starting to get a complex about it that they wouldn't come on.
Oh, no,
I don't think it's anything they have against you guys. It's just they're hard to track down, I think,
There's just different people in different departments. There's not like any... So far that I've been able to conclude, there's not any one person who sort of oversees everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I
so
think you're right.
They specifically...
I heard a representative of the project interviewed on... It was probably an open source podcast I was listening to. I'll see if I can find the back issue of that and maybe get you their name if I can. It's quite a while ago, I remember that, so I don't even know if they're involved in SourceForge anymore. But let me see if I can dredge that one up. Yeah, if I can, I'll email it to you, and maybe you have another guest.
That'd be great. Yeah, because SourceForge, you know, they do things for all different operating systems, Mac and Windows and Linux.
Of course.
I think they'd be a great guest to have on, and there's so much to talk about. Their catalog of software, which is all free
and
very high quality, open source, just a huge resource to have them on, and we could bring them on monthly and probably talk about a new product every single time to the end of time, because I don't know if we'd ever get caught up as they keep introducing new things.
Oh, yeah, and there are new software projects added all the time. And some
Not
of
to
them...
mention updates to current projects that significantly change them and enhance them.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of development goes on there, and some of it results in some very good and some very popular software applications out there, and some of them just kind of fizzle out and nothing ever happens. But,
but you think of things
activity.
Like Audacity. Audacity ones come to mind, and the Linux
Something
users
I use
and
every day.
Users.
There yeah, absolutely. So,
can't beat the price.
You bet.
We're just coming up against a break here in just a second, and I know we've got some more emails to get to, which we will. If anybody out there listening has a Linux-related question, please give us a call. It's toll-free. 866-606-TALK is the toll-free number, 866-606-8255. Of course, you're welcome to join us in our chat room. Craig and I are hanging out in there along with Larry and Addison, our chat room moderator, and a number of our listeners. You're certainly welcome, too. Just go to ComputerAmerica.com, and on the left-hand side of the page, you'll see where it says Chat With Us. And we'd be happy to see you in there. We'll take a quick break. We're coming right back.
Twenty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It is our all Linux show, all Linux, both hours. We do that every third Tuesday of the month. We devote the entire show to Linux. And in this hour, we're reading some of the emails Larry receives over the past month. This next one comes all the way from Austria. And the gentleman's name is Martin, right?
Right. Yeah, we get a lot of emails from other countries, quite frankly. A lot of our emails, most of our emails come from other countries, amazingly, although most of our listeners are from the U.S. Now, our topic for the night is supporting Linux, and Martin actually has a small business supporting Linux and Windows users alike, and he has a tech blog, and that supports his Linux and Windows support as well. And Martin wrote in to us saying, after a lengthy period of Martin in front of the computer, there is another Linux convert in the world, a home office user. Previously, my client used Windows XP with an old version of Microsoft Office, Office 97. While the PC has been updated over time, the user never needed anything more than Office 97, so never bought a more recent version. Now the old PC got slower and slower, so he wanted to buy a new one. I did a quick check regarding fragmentation, but this was not an issue. Anyway, the laptop was already about 4 years old, so it was time to replace it. The new PC had Windows 7 pre-installed, so the user really felt like he was in an unfamiliar environment. In addition to that, I could not get Office 97 Professional, including Access, to run in a stable way. Right away, I noticed the parts of Office were installed in separate folders, although they shouldn't be because of the changed folder strategy in Windows Vista and 7. So we decided that the user was going to need a more modern version of Office as well. The current version available, 2007, or is it already 2010? Who cares? Looks totally different from 97, or even from Office 2000 or 2003. So that would have made the user even more uncomfortable. So I decided to install OpenOffice on the Windows 7 box to save the user from additional cost and the hassle of learning the new user interface from Microsoft Office, too. Then I quickly got very annoyed with Windows 7's pop-up window verbosity for unimportant notifications, while important notifications were sometimes displayed only in tiny tooltips. I also told the user that if he wants me to continue doing Windows support for him, I will ask for more money. The user relied on my recommendations to try Linux, which I showed him. Although well into his 60s, he was more open to trying Linux and to getting familiar with a whole new operating system than he was to learning Windows 7 and the newer version of Office. There were a few rough edges to sand down. There are a few rough edges to sand down yet, because the hardware was not purchased with the possible Linux on it in mind, but fortunately, no real showstoppers. By the way, there is just one more. This is just one more of the cases where Microsoft has a plus one in its statistics for Windows 7 sales, but effectively, it has been erased. And remember that Martin is from Austria when he makes this last comment. There was a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger called Eraser, and this is my first association here.
I remember that
best
movie.
Best regards, Martin, and he has a link to his blog.
But before you comment on this, have you heard a comment? That's a very significant comment. Other than from other people, this comment where he specifically says that he was willing or more open to try learning Linux, a brand new operating system, than it was to learn the differences of Windows 7 up from XP.
I have heard it only from those people who have looked at Windows 7 on a computer and looked at Linux on a computer side by side, and they feel more in a familiar environment in Linux, particularly if it's one of the more modern distributions like Ubuntu or Linux Mint. Linux Mint in particular, because unlike Ubuntu, which has a top top bar across the top, more like the Mac menus are up at the top, when Linux Mint has the applications icon on the lower left, much like where the start menu is in Windows, and it's set up more like a Windows XP machine. So for those folks moving from an older version of Windows, Linux Mint in particular just feels more familiar. There are just that many changes in the user interface with Windows 7 to turn people off. Now, for those people who are switching from Windows XP to Windows 7 and never have looked at Linux, they quickly learn that Windows 7 isn't really all that much different. There's a few different bits of philosophy in there and how they set things up. Microsoft Office, with its ribbon interface, tends to be a little confusing at first as well, but you can get used to it too. So really it's a matter of first impressions that allow people to make that statement that they would be much more willing to try Linux and Open Office than to try to adjust to Windows 7 and Microsoft Office.
Hmm. Well, it was just it just hit me funny when I read that. I said, "Wow," mm-hmm. you know, because that's actually quite a strong statement. To the testament of how more friendly he must feel towards the Linux operating system just from an overview or a glance, you know, looking at it. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to break here. We'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux tonight. We'll continue on with Larry Bushy right after this. Thirty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all about Linux, Linux, and more Linux. We dedicate the third Tuesday of the month to the topic of the Linux operating system. And here to help us do that, Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. It's hour two. In the first hour, we were talking about supporting Linux computers. In this hour, we're reading some of the many emails that Larry gets over the month's time. And he picks a few of them out to read here on the Computer America Show because I'm assuming the guidelines are the ones that you pick are the ones that are probably by reading them and discussing them, the most helpful to the widest selection. What's your criteria for selecting an email to you?
Well, there are two, really. First of all, if it's in response to something that we've talked about on the Computer America episode,
sure.
I'll include it in for sure. Now, the other criteria is I am, as you suspected, trying to find something that would appeal to a wide audience, particularly to those folks who may not already be using Linux. And I'm trying to show Linux in both lights, both the positive light from the people who have very successfully used it, as well as in the light of those users who are having problems, and demonstrate that on shows like this, we can provide support for people who are switching to Linux or using Linux and be very successful at doing that.
Well, there you go. Well, let's. We heard from Martin in Austria and Barry in British Columbia. We're going to keep not necessarily overseas, but necessarily European, but outside United States flavor. How's that?
Yes, international.
International. We're going to go to Fraser in Canada. Okay.
Yeah.
What's that?
And I think Fraser has a small business up in Niagara Falls, Ontario, or up near there. And he writes to us saying, "I'm looking for some help convincing colleagues that Linux is secure, especially when it comes to uploading to a server via FTP transfer." And FTP stands for File Transfer Protocol.
Yep.
Honestly, I'd run Linux 100% if it weren't for the fact that the guys I work with in the production department at my church don't want me uploading to the server using Linux.
Whoa, really?
That struck me very funny.
Yeah, because of the server, chances are the server is probably using Linux,
probably
isn't it?
Probably using Linux, well, yeah. And
wait a minute, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, it doesn't matter what you're uploading it from. Whether or not it's secure is going to be on the server side, the transmission itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you're using to create the what you're using to transmit.
Exactly. Well, and this just illustrates that the unfamiliar is very scary to people. And even though, it doesn't matter whether you're using Linux, Mac, Windows, or some other operating system, FTP transfer is the same.
Yeah.
And, using Linux, you're less likely to upload a virus-infected file, quite frankly, because
viruses that's true.
Don't infect Linux computers. So moving...
But an FTP server doesn't know what you're connecting from. It doesn't care.
That's right. So the folks
don't call me from a cell phone. I don't know how secure it is. I mean, if your line's being tapped, it doesn't matter who's calling you from what phone. If it's your line that's tapped.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some aspects of the internet that makes everything the great equalizer. It doesn't care what operating system.
Exactly.
That's the whole idea behind the internet, is that it's supposed to, and it's in the perfect internet world, we're not supposed to care what operating system we're using on browser. Everything, we should be able to have access to and see everything, regardless of what OS we're running.
Yeah. Yeah. So poor Fraser has to maintain a Windows computer as well as his Ubuntu computer because of this whole issue. And we'll continue with Fraser's email, the rest of his email, and his description of his problem after the break.
All right. This is the Computer America Show. We're going to break just for 60 little tiny seconds, and then we'll continue on. It's All Linux Tonight. Larry Bushy, owner-operator of the Going Linux, creator of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. 60 seconds, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
40 minutes after the hour, we're back with the Computer America Show. It's All Linux for both hours tonight, talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. And right now we're referring to your emails. And before the break, we're just talking about, security concerns using Linux to upload files with an FTP server. The FTP program itself is going to determine whether or not it's going to require SSL or other secure or encrypted transmissions. It's not on the other side of what's connecting to the server. It's the server that decides that. And so, in theory, it's the same whether you're using Windows, Linux, Mac to connect to it. It's going to establish the same type of connection, secure or not. And the point Larry was making is that with Linux, you have less odds of having an infected file that you'll be uploading to the server as you would with a Windows machine. And I guess there was more to this email?
Yeah.
Fraser describes in a little more detail what was going on. He says, I know there are ways to upload to the server in Linux, but the guys at his church are concerned about security of the network, and particularly since it doesn't belong to them. I guess they're on a server that is someone else's server. So they're a little reticent to try experimental stuff like Linux, although Linux has been out there for a long time. Recently, I bought a new Toshiba satellite laptop with 4 gig of RAM and a 640 gig hard drive running Windows 7, 64-bit. I dual boot Ubuntu 10.04 Lucid Lynx and my Windows 7 Home Premium. I'd like to run Ubuntu all the time and scrap Windows altogether, but the guys are worried about the security of Linux. I need to have Windows. I can't just use the computers at the church to do the work I need, since our internet connection is very slow at the church. So I can do the uploading a lot faster from home with a true high-speed connection. I do most of the work I have to do with audio and video of the services using Ubuntu, but I transfer the files to my Windows side using Dropbox so that I can upload it to the church website server to be posted online. Can you guys give me some strong arguments for the security of file transfers using FTP apps on Linux? Thanks. If it weren't for you guys, I would never have gone Linux. And Fraser is, his business is Fraser's Light Freight Service. So Fraser, I emailed him back with a bunch of links, and many of them will include in the show notes. But the links really talk about what is FTP, what is secure FTP transfer, so SFTP. And there's also an FTPS, which is a different secure a protocol for uploading files using FTP, and they really need to be set up, as you mentioned, on the server side. And I recommended that before he tries to convince the folks that, you know, they should let him use Linux, he really needs to educate them on what security is. And if they are transferring using just straight FTP protocol without any of the secure protocols in place, they're sending everything in the clear as unsecure, unencrypted files. And anybody sitting between his computer and the server could very easily see everything that's going up to their server. Much more security concerns there using FTP than using Linux.
Yeah, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind, ignorance is bliss, that whole sort of thing. It reminds me of when I talk about services like Carbonite, and they say, well, is it secured? I mean, I'm putting my data out there on the Internet. How safe is that? And I go, well, are you encrypting your backups when you make them? Am I doing what?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not. So they're going to be more secure with their backups than you are with your – I mean, they're going to be more secure with your backups than you are with your own backups.
Right. And it's a lack of understanding of what security really means and what is what things are secure and what things aren't.
But
so
I think
it's a little
bit
of an education process.
Yeah, but I think he needs to shift his focus. Instead of saying, I want to do it my way and you should all let me do it my way, I think the focus should be, let me forget about the whole Linux thing. Let me teach you about security. Let's talk about security. And then once they understand that, if you can get them to understand it and verify that, in fact, the FTP server is secure, because as you mentioned, in all likelihood, it's quite possible that that thing is just wide open. They just set it up the easiest way and let them know this is wide open and this is not secure.
Yeah.
So we need to address that issue first. Now, once we secure that, it won't matter what we connect to it from. They'll all be connecting securely regardless, and then they should be much more open to saying, oh, then I guess it doesn't matter. Use whatever you want to use.
Right. And I confirmed with Fraser that indeed they were using FTP without any secure transmission at all and unencrypted files and the whole nine yards.
But
so
they're under this impression, you know, they've got this false sense of security that, well, it's FTP and it's secure because it's FTP. Because
right.
a lot of people don't know what FTP is. They probably never even heard of it before someone set it up for them. And they thought, oh, well, that's great. It's obscure security through obscurity. But that's not reality. And again, we go back to that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with the glasses that turn black anytime there was danger so you wouldn't see it, and therefore you wouldn't panic. The ostrich who buries its head in the sand doesn't actually solve what's causing the fear. Whatever it is that you're afraid of isn't being addressed by simply denying it. And that's what it is. It's basically a state of denial or a misunderstanding of what it is they have and an assumption that they've come to this assumption of they've concluded that this is secure and your Linux may not be, when it's completely baseless as far as facts go. And that is a little troubling, but it also depends on the people, because the people themselves, if they have no desire to learn, and this is one of the most frustrating things I've encountered, I can teach computers and I can make it fun and I can make it easy. But what I can't do is I can't make you motivated. I can't give you the desire to want to learn. If these folks that he's working with have no desire, if they say, look, I don't care, just leave it alone, it works. I don't want to change anything for fear of breaking it. Do it the way we do it, because we know that works and it's always worked, then he may have no choice but to just humor them and wait for somebody to break in, and then suddenly they're going to be motivated to want to learn how to secure it and why it happened. And it's unfortunate, but it's almost like trying to describe what hot is to somebody who's never burned themselves.
Yes.
There's just an understanding we all get from being burned that we can now associate with the word hot. And until we do that, and it's unfortunate, I wish there was a better way of learning. I certainly don't like to see people get hurt, but sometimes it's necessary.
Right. And, you know, you're absolutely right. If the folks he's working with here have no desire to concern themselves with security other than to say, I don't know what Linux is, so you can't use it, there's not much he can do. But
and it's not
that
worth
I
fighting over.
Right,
it's not
exactly.
worth, you know, alienating people or creating a rift with people you have to work with over something ultimately that's just a convenience for you and it's not a necessity. And just accommodate them and be there for them and then just wait, because if it's open like that, it's really probably just a matter of time before that comes back to bite them on the butt, and then be there for them with the answers, and then suddenly they'll respect you a lot more, and then the suggestions you have from that point forward will carry a lot more weight than they do now.
By the way, Carrie, those were called peril-sensitive sunglasses, if you want to.
Is that what they were?
Yes.
Peril-sensitive to when you're in peril.
Yes, peril-sensitive sunglasses. They're good there.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, you know, I think if I were using Windows, they'd be black all the time.
Actually, they'd be blue with little white letters. I guess, you know, it is a bit of a shame when we deal with what is effectively not logic and not facts, but politics. And anytime you're in an organization that involves a lot of different people from different backgrounds and different educations, politics, red tape, bureaucracy are bound to surface. And that can be much more difficult to, as an obstacle to overcome, than if you could just deal with someone logically about the facts.
Yep.
But that is just what comes with the territory.
Exactly right.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and we'll continue on in our All Linux show. We'll try to squeeze in maybe one more email, if we can get it in. Maybe the one from Paul, who lives in the UK. This is the Computer America show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Still have a chance to get a call in as well. This is Computer America. We'll continue on right after this. Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, with us both hours. Can we breeze quickly through this one from Paul? Do we have time?
Yeah, I think we might. Let's just get into it. Paul is from Leeds in the UK, and he asks, have you guys had any idea why Ubuntu copies files to and from a NAS or any USB or external hard drive so slowly compared to Windows? He goes on to talk about the fact that he's used multiple distros since 2003 and has hoped that there have been a solution by now, but hasn't found it. He's got problems moving files from his NAS. Upgrade hasn't helped, and Ubuntu just doesn't keep up with Windows XP and the file transfers over a NAS, over a network. And that's very true. They haven't resolved that issue. This is one of the big mysteries with Linux as to why file transfers over a network using a NAS device seems like 10 or 15 times slower in some cases with very large files than it is with Windows computers, even when the NAS device is running Linux. It's just puzzling to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Larry, if people want to listen to the Going Linux podcast, of course they can. We have a link to it as well and at computeramerica.com. And it's always a pleasure having you here on the show.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And again, Going Linux podcast, Larry Bushy, thanks so much for being with us here tonight. We'll catch you on the next third Tuesday of the month with more Linux topics, okay?
I'll be here.
Larry, thanks so much for being with us here tonight. Have a good evening. All right. Tomorrow night, we're going to do something a little different on Wednesday Madness.
That's right.
Yeah. Normally,
but it's still going to be fun.
Yes, it is.
It's going to be a fun, sort of a weird show.
Yeah. Listen to this. My wife of 12 years packed up her belongings last year and moved out of our home. After her car was loaded, I couldn't help but notice that a single item remained in her section of our closet, her wedding dress. You forgot something, I told her. She replied, and what's that? Your wedding dress, I said. Yeah, I'm not taking that, was her response. What do you expect me to do with it, I asked. And to that she replied, whatever the heck you want, and I'm being mild. And that is exactly what our guest did. He wants help coming up with 101 uses for his ex-wife's wedding dress.
This cost a lot of money, you know.
Yeah.
It's a shame to just throw it away or to donate. I mean, I guess it's a good thing to donate it, but it's a little more cathartic, I suppose, to find other uses for it to get your money back that you invested into it.
Yeah.
And he's come up with some ingenious solutions, from draining pasta to using it as an oil rag when he's checking his oil, even swinging it up between two trees to use it as a hammock.
There you go.
Or using it as a dog bed or even a sleeping bag. It's very creative.
Right.
And it's actually becoming a profit for him. He's actually making a business out of this.
Right.
He's not a computer guy.
Yeah.
He's an ordinary guy who just had this idea. And it's part of the inspiration series I was talking about this summer that we're bringing on guests who inspire.
There you go. And so that's,
and of course, an hour two.
Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, the Gizwiz, with us on the third Wednesday Madness every month. In the second hour, he'll be joining us as well. So that's our Wednesday Madness lineup
for a great show
tomorrow night. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Don't forget, ComputerAmerica.com. Our contest is in full swing. Head over to ComputerAmerica.com and get your contest entry in as soon as possible. And also, if you're thinking about doing support.com, remember that special code, COMPAM25, gets you 25% off their technical support services. Check it out at ComputerAmerica.com. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.